Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us and ask us a question, a problem on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. This show is for any legal subject. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Today, we're doing a show, our injury show on KOA at 10 o'clock from 10 to 11. It's a one-hour injury show every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. And, you know, today we're talking about significant new case law developments with regard to and pertaining to injured victims. This is very important. You know, the framework of this whole situation is the laws. How do you get the laws? We have the statutory laws passed by the legislature, sometimes ordinances passed by a local municipal city, and you have the case law. What is case law? Common law. What is common law? Common law. We inherited it from England. Is the common law's judge-made law. When the courts make a decision, even on a statute or even without a statute, then that becomes the common law and becomes the case law. And so we have statutes in the state of Colorado, and we have four brand-new decisions decided in May, last month, in May by the Colorado Supreme Court that drastically impact and affect and enhance, in many cases, injured victims' rights. Today at 10 o'clock, we're going to cover each of the cases. We're going to show how it applies to you, to your family, how it applies to your damages, how it applies to your injuries, how it applies to your insurance company and policies, and the at-fault party's insurance company and policies. How does that really work? Today at 10 o'clock. And the decisions, that they all come out pretty much at the same time in the month of May, and they answered longstanding questions that went all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court. And I'll tell you what, Brad and I made the point in the show that's coming up at 10 o'clock today that if you think about it, right, if you think about it, these insurance companies appeal these decisions all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court. And it goes through the district court level. It goes to the Court of Appeals level, all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court. That takes a lot of money, time, and effort. Money, time, and effort. Why do they do it? Listen to our show today at 10 o'clock, and you're going to find out why. Okay, Brad, let's talk about releases in our Colorado statute with regard to releases. It's 1321-301. I don't think a lot of people know this, and there's a statute that prohibits releases and insurance companies getting statements. That's important within a certain time period after an accident. Prohibits them from getting statements, and also prohibits them from obtaining releases or negotiating a settlement within the first 30 days.
Well, sure there is. And it's a necessary thing. But once again, you know, you got adjusters when you've been hurt in a crash. You get adjusters who are trying very quickly to get a settlement. And when they try and get a settlement, they're going to try and get one quick before you realize the full extent of your injuries. And they had a problem. And the problem was is these adjusters were trying to get settlements while the person was still under the care of a doctor. And so 1321-301 states that, you know, it came out and said that if the person is under the care of a practitioner of the healing arts or is hospitalized, that the insurance companies cannot, within the first 30 days from the date of the crash, attempt to negotiate a settlement. They can't attempt to get a release within that first 30 days. And within the first 15 days, they can't get a statement. And why is that so important? Because you have adjusters and you have insurance companies that, but for this law, while the person's in the hospital or while they're being tended to by a doctor and while they're still under care, would be trying to get statements to use against them in the future. Gary, you and I have talked about the statements before and why it's so important and critical that you talk to a lawyer before you do that. And they would be trying to get releases and they try and do settlements because they can get a quick one, especially when you're hurt, especially when you're in need of immediate help. They're going to get the best deal against you and it's not going to be successful.
Well, once you cross the hurdle in your mind, and if you listen to us, we pound it all the time. Once you cross the hurdle in your mind that even the at-fault insurance company, they call you up, you've had a wreck, you've been rear-ended, T-boned, head-on collision, once you cross this threshold that they're not your friend, they're not on your side, they might be friendly to you, but they're not on your side, Then you get to the field of, wow, they are really trained from the get-go. This is what they do. They have been trained by their own staff, by their own senior officials, by attorneys, by doctors. They have doctors, they have attorneys, and that's what's happening on the very first phone call when they want to negotiate a settlement or get a statement from you or find out what happened in the crash. You know, on our website, championsofthepeople.com, there's a button right on the homepage. Right when you open up championsofthepeople.com, there's a button about our show where we say what you need to know before the first phone call to an adjuster. Now, there were some technical difficulties with this button, this box, but we got it resolved. And you can go there, championsofthepeople.com. You can click on the box and you can listen to the show. And there's more improvements to that feature coming up. Right now, joining us live is Debbie from Denver. Good morning, Debbie. What can we do for you?
Hi, I just had a legal contract question.
Okay.
And we're a small franchise, and you know, in the agreement, it has a lot of, you know, agreements that you'll do this and that. And in one paragraph, it says that the franchisee or the, you know, people that own the franchise can pick and choose when they want to enforce these and to who they want to enforce them on. And I'm just wondering, is that legal that, you know, oh, I don't like this franchise person, so I'm going to enforce this law, but this other five are doing the same thing and I'm not going to enforce it on them?
Okay, that's a great question, and thanks for the question. So I'm going to take the beginning of it, and then Brad will pick up. So let's just talk about contract law to begin with, all right? So you enter into an agreement or a contract, and it has provisions like you're just talking about. Maybe the franchisor imposes these discriminately against you and not against others. So the legal question is this. It is in the contract. It's there. You just said it's there. So that was an agreement. Now, does that provision or paragraph violate some law, some case law, some statute? So that's the legal analysis. First, you start with the contract. It's there. It has the provisions, but is it enforceable and is it legal? And so that's where you start with this whole situation.
Okay.
What have they told you, Debbie?
Just, you know, basically they've just picked out one of the things that's on the contract and said you're not meeting this provision.
Right.
And like I said, there's, you know, hundreds of other people out there not meeting that provision either, but they're not enforcing it across the board.
Well, the problem you run into is that the first thing you have to do is find out why they're being discriminatory against you. If it's a protected right, then they can't do it. But on the other hand, if they say they have certain rules and regulations that they're going to enforce at their discretion, and if it's in the contract, you've signed up on that contract, most of the time, if it's not a discriminatory, something that's a protected right, something that's protected under our Constitution, they're going to be able, they've got it right in their contract. And most courts are going to say you took the contract, you agreed to the contract. Now, is there an area where they can get outside reasonability, where they can get far outside of it and make impossible requirements or do things that make it such that you can't maintain your franchise because the competitive advantage has been given to somebody else that's just down the street that's also in the franchise? That may be a place where you can look and get them for some type of bad faith performance on the contract. But you're going to have to go a long ways, especially when they leave themselves to be able to make those decisions. Is this something where they're destroying your competitive advantage with other franchisees?
Not within the franchise, but with other competitors.
Okay, so though the courts have been very strong in protecting the franchisor with respect to what's in the contract and allowing them to control what's in the contract and do the things that are necessary in the contract to run the franchises they deem as necessary.
Debbie, we got a little bit more to cover. Can you hang with us during
sure.
the break?
Hang with us.
Are you there, Debbie?
I am.
Okay, we'll be right back with you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You can call us on any legal subject. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, but right here on the show, we're here for you. And welcome to all of our new listeners at KRAI, Craig, Colorado. Also welcome KRDO in Colorado Springs, KEZZ 94.1 FM in Steamboat Springs. We're here for you. We'll be right back.
Maybe we can see the same. Now don't you worry.
Good morning. Welcome back. Here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We have offices in Denver and Steamboat Springs. We do cases all over the state of Colorado, and we have for over 30 years. All of our free books are on our website, championsofthepeople.com. Right before the break, we were talking to Debbie. She's a small franchisee, franchise owner, and the franchisor is apparently discriminating against some of the contract provisions against her and trying to enforce them against her and not other people. Are you still with us, Debbie?
I am.
You there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So there's some law that covers this particular situation. They can enforce the contract, but they can't discriminate basically against one franchisee, you, in favor of another one, if you guys are similarly situated. Let me give you an example, and then we'll drill down to the details for you. If they have a non-compete, for example, that's not your question, but if they had a non-compete and they enforced it against somebody in Colorado, but they didn't enforce it against somebody in California, that wouldn't be discrimination because they cannot enforce. It's not legal in California under that particular situation, but it would be legal in Colorado. So there would be an instance where a franchisor could discriminate. So Brad and I were talking about your case and situation during the break. It depends a lot on what your contract says, and you're to competitive disadvantage. You mentioned something about that before we went on break. What is the disadvantage we're talking about, or you're talking about?
Well, we'll kind of go with what you said, the non-compete. So say it was that. Okay. Oh. And they tip, and say we're in Colorado or another state that has the same legal that we do, and they choose to pick and choose who they enforce it with.
Okay, well, so I think the case law, and if you're listening to the top of the show, that's court-made law on the statutes. But I think the court-made law is right on the fence, because they can't discriminate against somebody that's similarly situated. And you're talking about a non-compete. So if it's somebody in another state, I mean, Colorado has certain rules on non-compete. If you're talking about another state and that's legal in the other state, then the franchisor is heading towards a problem. Is there a black and white true slam dunk answer? No.
Yeah, and a lot of it may also depend on your franchise agreement, what law controls. Because quite often they're going to have a state law of, let's say, depending on your franchise, let's say it could be Washington or it could be Minnesota or it could be some other state, Michigan, Connecticut, and there's different laws that are going to control. And a lot of times your franchise agreement is going to say you submit to this venue, you submit to the laws, and these are the laws that this state will be controlling. There's different court-made laws.
Okay.
But generally, the question is, why are they focusing on you, and why are they discriminating against you? But once again, you go back to the beginning of the contract. If the contract itself gives them discretion, they're still within a realm of discretion that they have to do. They can't step outside all bounds to start harming your franchise, to start doing things that are difficult to your franchise or that are going to harm your franchise over others, and why they're selectively deciding to take this action. Also, is it malicious? Are they looking and saying, well, we want to get a hold of your franchise, and we want to give you problems in your franchise so that we can take it over? We want to get it back. You won't sell it back to us, or we won't be able to get it back. But what we can do is we can make some restrictive statements within the franchise agreement that's going to make it so you're going to have to sell it back, or you're going to have to get rid of it because you can't make any money off of it.
The other thing, Debbie, is let's don't forget, everybody, in every contract, including yours, there is an implied covenant of good faith, okay?
Okay.
And that's a huge issue in many, many contract disputes. There's an implied covenant of good faith. And so in lawyer talk for you, Debbie, you have a very fact-specific issue, and it would need some investigation into the facts, the contract, what other franchisees are getting away with, and how they're bending this towards or against you. But
okay,
there's an implied covenant of good faith. And many times, I mean, if you were sitting in my office and I was talking to you about the situation, I would probably advise you need it so it's right on the line, so you do have some rights, so you probably should take an aggressive position with them and ask them some questions. I love asking people questions instead of just always making allegations or statements. Question, Mr. Franchisor, why are you imposing this against me this way and not on others? Question, let's see your answer. Why in the contract are you doing this? What part of the contract allows you to do this? And questions.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to take it right to the line, but you got to be careful you don't get it to a point where you give them a reason that they can revoke your franchise.
Correct.
And because that's the ultimate power they have. I'm reluctant to have you talk a whole lot about this franchise on the air because I don't want the franchise given out. So what I'd like to do is get your name and number and talk to you off the air.
Okay.
And be able to give you more information about it, get the specifics of yours and find out where we can fight it if you're being discriminated against, especially if it's giving you an unfair competitive advantage, so that you can't compete against those people doing the same business out there. You're going to go under anyway, so the best thing we can do is go in and fight it.
Okay.
Hey, Debbie, I'm going to put you on hold. Ryan's here instead of Kevin today. Give Ryan your information, and we very much appreciate your call, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. Today at 10 o'clock from 10 to 11 on KOA, 850 a.m., our one-hour injury show every Saturday at 10 o'clock, and today we're talking about new Supreme Court decisions affecting injured victims' rights, affecting your whole family, actually. Right now, we're going to talk from Mark from Aurora. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how are you guys this morning?
Good.
Hello, Mark.
How are you?
All right. Got my trick question for you guys. Went through a divorce, signed a quit claim on property, but she never refied the house. The house is now being paid through a third party because she couldn't handle the mortgage. So, and then I'm trying to get a house, and what I'm being told by my brother who does real estate, doesn't matter. Quit claim doesn't mean nothing. You're still on that mortgage.
Okay. All right, Mike, that's a great question. It always comes up in divorces. It always comes up in the real estate arena, which you're asking about, and also comes up in the credit card arena. And you know, one spouse says, well, the other one's supposed to pay this under court order, but they're not paying, and they're coming after me. And so now the quit claim did convey your right, title, and interest, if any. It's not a warranty deed. It's a quitclaim deed. There's a big difference. But you are still on the mortgage. That is still a legal obligation, a note, and a deed of trust, and it is enforceable, even though maybe in the court order she was supposed to take care of this. She couldn't take care of it. And there's ways to go back to the divorce court. And that's an ugly situation to compel relief, but you're still on the note.
I'm surprised it's not already in there. And you know, let's go back to the beginning of this. When you did your divorce, did you have a lawyer?
Yeah, and you know, the thing was, I agreed to all her terms. She wanted the house. She said, sign the quit claim. You're not going to be on hook. She was going to refi it. That never happened. Now, if I try and get a house, that I had to fix my credit score, everything, and that's still hanging on me.
No, is that in the order?
Okay, so what
happens in a divorce, you get a decree that divorces you, and then you have a separation agreement, or you get a order from the court. If people can't agree, it sounds like you had an agreement that you guys worked out everything. You did a divorce agreement, whatever it's called. It can be called a permanent order, separation agreement, whatever it's called. And the court then said, okay, everybody follow this. Now, if your lawyer was doing his or her job, and I believe probably he or she was, that says you're quit claiming all your right, title, and interest into that property to her, and she is now responsible to do the following. Pay the mortgage, refinance the mortgage, get your name off the mortgage, take appropriate steps. If she's not doing that, she's in violation of a court order. And when she's in violation of a court order, you can take her back to court to hold her in contempt or to find out why she's not obeying that court order and require that she to obey the order.
But what's my legal right? Because I did everything in the agreement.
Force her into it or get damages from it. If it's in the court order, we'd have to to look at the order.
All right. So, and Mark, but specifically, and Brad hit the nail right on the head because you're supposed to quit claim the property over. You did that.
Yeah.
But does it say that she's going to go, she is refinancing?
Yes.
Okay.
She was supposed to refinance the house where I'd be out of sight, out of mind.
If it's clear and unambiguous, then the court approved it, and that means it was a court order. That means she's in contempt of court.
Has she taken good faith efforts to do it? Do you know if she's taken any efforts?
No. Like I said, gentlemen, she's paying the house now through what she claims is a third-party payment now.
How long have you been divorced?
4 years.
No, it's too long. She has to move. She has to get going on it. She if she hasn't done it, you have some rights on that. You know,
okay. Mark, I want to talk to you after the break. Can you hang with us just a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, and thanks for the call. We'll be right back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Don't forget about the show after our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. They cover all kinds of interesting questions. They're experts in real estate. They have their own opinions, and they're worth listening to. They cover different things, and I've said to you before, one of the most fascinating parts of a legal real estate contract to me is the notice of correction, the inspection, notice to correct, and what happens there and how you should work that. And so they're experts on that. That's the show after ours. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Just to play with me and you won't get burned. I have only one itch and desire. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Grab your legal coffee, your legal bagel. We're going to talk to Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric. What's cooking over there?
Hey, we got some specials for you guys. I'll run them down real quick. That breakfast special is going to be the one I talked about last week. That is the oatmeal French toast that we run there. What we do is we take the French toast and we roll it up in old-fashioned oats, grill it to a crispy golden brown. It's really, really good. Serve it with a side of real maple syrup. Can't beat that. Really interesting item, but really, really tasty. That's our breakfast special for the rest of the week. And then our lunch special is going to be our Reuben sandwich. Now, we call our Reuben sandwich a Reuben kicker because we put those Hatch green chilies on there. Definitely gives it a little bit of kick. That's on marble swirled rye. We put the Swiss cheese, of course, that Hatch green chili. A little bit of turkey on that as well. Corned beef, sauerkraut, get that going right there. You can always get our homemade chips or our waffle cut fries on the side. Both of those are really, really good to accommodate with that special. Sorry about that. That's our lunch special for the rest of the week. And guys, don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays, we still are doing the all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price of that buffet. We've been doing that for a while now. That has scratch-made products on it, so come down and check that out. Crafts and mimosas are ready to go. The umbrellas are ready to go. The flat screens are on. The World Cup's on. All kinds of Colorado sports in addition to that. So come on down to Caitlin's and check us out, guys.
That sounds great, Eric. It sounds really good. You know, I think this is going to be a good day for the deck. Tomorrow worries me. You know, Father's Day is up. How about a burger and a beer at Caitlin's?
Absolutely. Every Father's Day, we do the burger of your choice, and you can get one of those green chili cheeseburgers. I always recommend that Hatch green chili and a beer. We're running that special, of course. We'll bring Dad down, start the day off right, get him on the golf course, or get him up in the mountains after that, whatever you want to do. Good tasting food, good times at Caitlin's, a great way to start the day. We'll be welcome to have you down.
Eric, where are you located?
Guys, we are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, come and see us.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, 303-713-8255. You can call us on any legal question. Right before the break, we were talking to Mark about a divorce question. Mark went through a divorce.
Yeah, still here. Well, the question was, the quick claim I signed on the house, she never got it refied, and now me trying to purchase a house, that's hanging on me, even though it was in my divorce agreement that she took possession of the house. Then the house went into a third-party payment. That's the way she explained it, because she couldn't keep up with the mortgage.
What is that? What did she give you any more details about this third-party payment?
No, I mean, I wish I knew the answer, because she fell behind on it where it almost went into foreclosure.
Did she file bankruptcy by any chance?
She told me she didn't.
Okay. A third-party payment normally... I'm trying to figure out, okay, what do we mean by third-party payments? Where would we have a third-party payment on a mortgage? And, you know, what
I don't know.
What I look at is I go, well, you know, that sounds like we're talking about somebody stepped in and is helping her in a debt consolidation type deal or in a bankruptcy type deal and has made some kind of payment plan with the mortgage company, which really hurts you too, because have you checked your FICO score?
Yeah, I just had it pulled a week ago. My score, I've improved it. It's 732. I fixed mine.
So, but there's nothing on your credit reports or your FICO score saying there's been delinquent payments on the mortgage or there's problems with the mortgage?
Well, they said probable mortgage because I was never taken off that loan.
Right. It'll say you're still on there, but there's been no delinquencies on the mortgage that is showing up on your credit score.
Correct. But it's still hanging there.
All right. You know, here's what's got to happen, Mark. When you're in a situation like this, as Gary and I have been saying, you have a right to enforce the court order. And if it's in the court order that they're supposed to make, that she's supposed to get this thing refinanced, 4 years is more than enough time for her to have taken good faith efforts to refinance.
I've been very patient.
Right. And if she hasn't refinanced, there's got to be a reason. And here's what happens. So a court order is a court order. Now, she has to be working towards that court order. If you can't obey the court order because of circumstances that are existing, then you're not in contempt of court, but then something's got to be addressed. Something's got to be worked out to refinance this mortgage. She's been in a time in the last 4 years where mortgage rates have been at their lowest, and it's been fairly easy to get a mortgage loan, a new loan. She should have worked this out. So I think what you got to do is, we can talk to you off the air, take a look at your agreement, and tell you what you're going to do. Is the divorce in Arapahoe, Jefferson, Denver?
It was Arapahoe County.
Okay, Arapahoe County, and those are very good judges over there, and they do a great job, and they will look at this type of thing, and they're the type, and the judges will decide whether or not she should have been able to refinance, whether she's made good faith efforts to refinance, whether she should have any kind of further order or be held in contempt of court. But the first thing is to make demand on your ex to say, what have you been doing and why haven't you gotten this done? Not just you calling her and talking to her, but formally through an attorney. Now, we're happy to talk to you, or you can go back to your old attorney or whatever you want to do on that.
You know, Mark, from my take on this situation is your bottom line remedy is court, period. It's contempt of court. It's in the stipulation. It's a court order. And let's everybody make yourself the judge right now. You make yourself the judge, Mark. So you cite her for contempt. Let's say we're going to have a hearing today, right now, on the air. Right now, we're having a hearing. Come into court. And so what judges look for in contempt is, is it clear in the order? Here it is. Was it 4 years ago? Yes. Is enough time gone by to enforce it or for her to do it? Yes. So the next step
is... Mark agreed with all her terms.
Right. But the next step for the judge... And her defense is she comes into court and she says, I've been trying. Here's my nine attempts. I tried to refinance this. I couldn't get it done. Now, if she comes in and says, I haven't done anything, and the judge says, ma'am, what have you done in the last four years to get this done? And she just has a blank stare and she says, I don't know. I haven't done anything. Then the blood pressure goes right through the ceiling for the judge, right through the ceiling.
Could they force a sale of the house?
A judge could, but normally what a judge is going to do to begin with is going to say, okay, I'm ordering you right now to start taking steps. I want a regular report of what you're going to be, of what you're doing. I want to see progress being made. I want to find out what's going on. If, in fact, she can't do it or there's something else that's come up, a judge is going to look at an equitable situation to determine what's fair. And we've got to remember your side of the fair. Your side of the fair is hey, I can't get another house. I can't go on with my life. I can't enjoy the benefits of home ownership and the equity that gets increased and the money that gets made. Right. So I think a judge could look and say, I'm going to force sell the house. And so the mortgage gets paid off. Judge, normally I would think, and I don't know enough of your circumstances to tell you for sure. Normally I would think is going to look and say, all right, you've got this many days to get it refinanced, and I want to see the progress being made. You're going to give me regular reports on what you're doing to get this house refinanced.
I think some judges, Mark, might say, "Okay, we're going to have a hearing in 2 weeks from today, and you're going to show me what progress you're making. Then we're going to have a hearing in two more weeks after that, and we're going to have a hearing every 2 weeks until I'm satisfied." And that's a way to monitor. And if you don't get this done, then I have the power. I'm a court of equity. You guys can Google that. Court of law, court of equity. Kind of fascinating history. But I'm a court of equity, and I can enforce this, and I can order this property sold, and I can do this and this and this and this. And I've seen a federal judge one time order the Social Security Administration to come to his courtroom at 7 o'clock in the morning every Tuesday. Every Tuesday until the thing was resolved.
Right. Huh? Do I have a legal right to that house still?
Probably not.
Probably not, but that can be part of the remedy if things don't work out. You got to get in front of a court. You have to, Mark.
Yeah, the first thing is getting in front of a court, finding out what exactly she's talking about, what exactly she's done, and then how you've got to be protected, what's got to be done for you.
I agree.
And that's going to be something that's got to be done very quickly, or should be done very quickly. Interest rates are going up. They just knocked them up another 0.25%. I mean, it's you know, you've got a right to move on with your life, too. So yeah. This has got to be looked into right away.
All right. So, Mark, are we answering your questions?
Yes, you did. I appreciate that.
Why don't you stay on hold and let's get your number?
All right. But, you know, thank you for the call, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, we are here for you. We're going to take all your calls in the order in which they've come. Right now we're talking to Susan from Meade, Colorado, I believe. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. I think I have a fairly easy question, although it may be odd.
Okay.
Does a patient have the right to refuse to have their ID scanned?
A patient?
Yes.
Okay, scanned by who? Hospital, doctor's office, what?
Right.
Which one?
Both.
Both?
Both. Like.
Okay, and what are you talking about, your ID, your Social Security number?
No, like your photo ID. They want to, I don't mind them scanning in my insurance card, but they want to scan in, you know, your photo ID and your insurance card. And I, like I said, I don't mind having my insurance card scanned. I don't want my photo ID scanned, and I'm perfectly fine with presenting it each time, you know, to verify that it's me. But I don't want it scanned into their system.
What a fascinating legal question. We're about to go to break. Can you stick with us also?
Sure.
So after the break, and we appreciate your call. We'll be right back with you, Susan. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our injury show, 1 hour injury show, every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock to 11 on 850 AM KOA. Today, we're talking about the most recent case law developments, very significant, relating to injured victims' claims, insurance contracts, insurance policies and coverages. And as we said earlier, think about it. These insurance companies take these cases all the way to the Supreme Court because they don't like the decision of the lower courts and they want to change it. And you must ask yourself, why? Bell and Pollock, we'll be right back. Good morning, welcome back. Here we go, Legal Rock and Roll. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We're here to help you. Our telephone number is 303-713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking to Susan about a medical question, scanning in her ID either from a hospital or a doctor's office. She said she's glad to present it each time, but she doesn't want to give it to them so they can scan it in. Is that correct, Susan?
Yes.
Okay. Brad, what do you think?
Well, Susan, there's a number of different questions, obviously. It's not all black and white. If you're under Medicare or Medicaid, they may be able under federal law to do a scanning to or take the necessary information or verify the necessary information to assure that you're who you are and that you can go ahead and proceed under the Medicare or Medicaid. But also there's a huge privacy concern on your side that your picture ID and that your that information should not be given to the doctor. So the bottom line is, I believe that you're still able and entitled to say, no, I don't want you scanning this. I don't want it going in. They're going to take a lot of that same information and put it on their forms. If they're insisting on scanning, you can look and you can say, I want to know what the protection, I want to know my privacy rights are and how you're protecting my information. A lot of this is now the way the doctors think they're going to be able to prevent fraud and prevent people from and make sure they have the right records to the right spot. But then again, like I said, the privacy issue and the protection of your privacy is paramount. And normally under, I think, the HIPAA rules and under the law, you can look and say, I don't want it scanned. Now, all that being said, you've got to remember a doctor can also refuse to see patients. If a doctor can say, I don't want you to be my patient anymore, and I, for one reason or another, and if the doctor is saying, look, if you don't allow scanning, that's fine, but I don't want to I don't want somebody to be my patient if they're not going to do, if they're not going to let me take the information I feel is necessary to carry out my necessary billing and to carry out my, my practice. So, you know, I don't think legally they can force you to give the, to allow this, to scan your driver's license.
Right, but you're saying they can refuse to see you if you don't want it to be scanned.
I believe they can look and say, I don't, you know, and now, and this is something, when I'm saying this, let me caution, because I don't have all the information.
Right.
They may not be able to do that under your insurance plan. If
okay.
you, if you've got Blue Cross Blue Shield and this is a provider and the provider is required to see you under your insurance plan, okay? Mm-hmm. And if the only reason they're saying we don't want to see you is because we can't scan your license into the system, you very well and probably do have the rights under the Blue Cross Blue Shield or under the insurance program to say, no, I want to continue seeing this doctor and,
okay.
and require the doctor to see you. So now we've got a second contract involved and a second contractual obligation. And also it may depend on where you're at and what, and you know, is this the only doctor that you're going to be able to see? How far else do you have to go see the doctor?
You know,
right.
I want everybody to learn how to ask questions. I mean, it sounds like a stupid statement. I want to give you an idea. You are confronted with, let's say, making an example. I'm making this up. You're confronted with the most aggressive person in the doctor's office that you can have. You're going to give me your ID. I got to scan it in. It's required. I have to do it, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Instead of trying to argue with them, learn how to ask questions like, is there any policy in writing, ma'am, that requires me to give you your ID to scan it in? Does the doctor have a policy in writing? Is it in the insurance policy, as Brad just mentioned, in the insurance, with Blue, example, Blue Cross Blue Shield, whereas I have to give you my ID, or is it not, or is my ID protected? What provision are you relying on to make me give you my ID to scan it in? Instead of arguing with them, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you're talking about a car deal, an ID scan, or a contract, as we talked about earlier in the show. Ask them questions, because most of the time, these aggressive people that are going to be on a power trip can't answer the questions.
Okay, because I actually work with a health facility, so I understand about verifying the identity.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I will present my ID each time. Every time I come in, I will give you, and you can see that it's me. I just don't want it scanned in to the computer. So I understand about verifying my identity.
Sure.
But Susan,
turn that into a question. Would it be okay? Is it okay with you and consistent with your policies? Is each time I bring in, I give you my ID rather than scan it in?
And Susan, I think under HIPAA, you have the upper hand, to be clear.
Okay.
I don't think a facility can require a patient to take a photo from the patient, nor can they require that they are able to scan in your information.
That's what I was told. She said, she goes, well, you just have to understand that the doctor's office can refuse to see you. And I was like, seriously? If I wanted to be seen for a medical reason, they can refuse me health care?
Well, I'm not, here's the thing. I'm not so sure the doctor can look and say, if you're not giving me this protected health information or this protected information, these privacy information, and letting me scan it into my system, that that can be the reason the doctor doesn't see you. What I'm trying to say is doctors can refuse to see you for a number of reasons. And if they don't think you're cooperative or if they don't like reasons, pretty soon you find they won't see you. I don't think they can force you to allow them to scan your information in their system. And as Gary said, you can turn the table right around on them just by saying, let me see your privacy. How do I know if you don't get hacked all of a sudden, all my stuff? I can tell you in my practice, I don't allow opposing counsel to take copies of my clients' driver's licenses.
Okay.
I don't allow it because it's got other information that they're not entitled to have. I think you can do that.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Susan, thank you for the call, ma'am.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We're here for you. And right now we're here for Crystal. Hi, Crystal. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have Medicare and I have Humana insurance. And I went for two sleep studies with a sleep specialist doctor, and he recommended an ASV machine. I don't have a typical sleep apnea. It's complicated. And so I went online. I bought a machine online for the best price that I could find. Some were charging up to $4,500.
Whoa, okay.
And I found a reputable one that did sell me one for $2,800. And I was feeling so bad, I just didn't want to even wait one more day trying to go through the insurance company to see whether they would approve it or deny it or whatever. And so I went online, I bought it, and then I submitted a claim to the insurance company, and I just got word a couple of days ago that it was denied, and it was because I'd gone about the wrong way of getting the machine.
What did they say the right way? You should have submitted for advance approval?
I suppose so. I haven't spoken with them. I just found out yesterday, and so...
Who denied you?
The insurance company, Humana.
Humana did?
Yes.
And so they gave you an explanation of benefits, saying it was denied?
Well, they did not. I had called and spoken with someone. I said, if I, purchased the machine, what would my copay be? And that kind of
Crystal, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm very sorry. We're going to take care of your problem off the air, but give Ryan your information. Our show's about to end, but I'm very sorry. I apologize to you for that, but we'll glad to solve your problem this week, okay?
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there free. You can download an e-copy free, or if you want a hard copy of our book, call our law firm at 303-795-5900, and we'll give you a hard copy free. Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people.